Welcome back to the IMD Podcast Network. Today, we're bringing you some invaluable insights from the C-suite. Rick Roy, Professor of Leadership and Organization at IMD, is joined by Kevin O'Brien, CEO of Gammon Construction, a key business unit within the Jardine Matheson Group. Mr. O'Brien opens up about his unexpected journey to the top, the crucial transition moments that shaped his career, and the profound shifts in mindset and behavior required when stepping into the CEO role. He'll share why the view from the top is uniquely challenging and how he navigates the delicate balance of leading a successful organization while still charting his own course. Lessons no aspiring leader should miss.
Hello, everyone. This is Rick Roy, Professor of Leadership and Organization with IMD, the Swiss Business School. We are very happy to have Kevin O'Brien with us today. Kevin is the CEO of Gammon Construction, which is a key business unit within the Jardine Matheson Group. Thank you very much for joining us, Kevin.
Thank you very much, Rick, and it's good to be with you here today.
So our topic today is looking at the biggest challenges that you had to face and overcome on your pathway to chief executive or CEO. So let's start kind of with the first question, which is around now that you've been in the chief executive role for a while with Gammon, but how long have you wanted the top job? When did you realize in your career it's something you aspire to? And what were some of the key transition moments or points that sort of moved you on the way to this important role?
I've always sort of said to myself that I've never been an overly ambitious person. I always had eyes on the top job. I've allowed myself to evolve as I went through my career. But I guess that I've always been ambitious and I've always tried to do the job that I was then assigned to the best of my ability, and looked at that to prove my worth to whoever was supervising me, or whoever, as one of my leaders sometimes says, whoever had their hands on my shoulder. So I guess I started to sort of move in my mid-30s away from my area of expertise into a more general management stream, and slowly moved up the organization, first of all to board level, then to become an exec director, and then eventually got moved into another business unit elsewhere in the group to prepare myself to come back and do the job that I'm currently doing. And it's very interesting on that journey, because through that, I've been through an M&A process, I've been transferred into another business unit, I've come back into my home business unit. And so it's really been a journey of evolution without me necessarily needing to move outside. And listen, there's no perfect route to the top job, because different organizations, different sectors, different geographies, everything is sort of evolving. And really today what we'll talk about is really my own journey that hopefully some other people can pick snippets up from, but no two journeys are the same.
That's a really good point. This is a bespoke journey for all of you aspiring to C-suite or CEO roles. I think it's an important message, Kevin, you've provided here. As you were progressing into the C-suite, into the chief executive role, and even into your board directorships, how is a chief executive role different than the other C-suite roles, say the CFO, the CHRO, the other folks that are reporting to you? How is it different in your mind?
Yeah, one of the things, particularly in that move from the director or an exec director up to the CEO role, you have to be very aware that all eyes are on you. All eyes are on you, all eyes are on your moves, all eyes are on your actions, all eyes are on your words, all eyes are on your behaviors. And you have to be conscious of that. And you also need to understand that it's more difficult to build allyship in the boardroom when you are the CEO than when you're in those other positions where you're amongst peers. So some people may say that the CEO role is a little bit lonely, but one of the things that I'm very conscious of is not to be too fast in making actions, to listen a lot more in the role that I'm doing now. And it's, you know, this observe, learn, plan, to take account of the situational analysis, particularly when you're new into that role. And one of the things that I've always liked to do when I've moved into, particularly in the leadership role, is the interviews with the leadership team as I've come back in. And so we spend a lot of time outside looking into the behaviors of the CEO. But when you are the CEO, sometimes you need to be a little bit more specific as to answers that you want. And so when I came back on board into Gammon in 2021, one of the things I did was I held interviews. I spent an hour with 60 top leaders in the business, and every one of them got the same list of questions. It was a questionnaire that I curated over about 3 months before I came back on board to try and find answers out to particular points. But it also gave me a pulse check of the organization. It gave me a pulse check of the team's competence. It gave me a pulse check as to what was going in within relationships in within the team. And still to this day, some 4 years later, I still am able to mentally reflect back on some of those conversations and look at how it's impacting the organization as we stand today, or individuals' journeys as they've continued to evolve on their own transitions through different roles to this day. And so for me, those interviews, and they were quite hard because I told everybody that they couldn't not answer any questions, because I'm now sitting in the leadership role and I wanted to be very direct. And so it took some of them, took some sort of particular work to get answers to the questions, because they were very sort of pointed questions. But as I made the comment, I said to everyone, and I've been honest to this day, that they were Chatham House rules. What we said in those in that room with the 1 hour I had with those 60 people would stay between us. It's always stayed between us. But I've used it to inform my direction of travel as I came out and planned the way forward as I went on the journey, the new strategic journey with the business.
So I think the takeaway there is listen deeply to the managers, the organization, and really get a deep understanding of where the organization culture sits today before you started to make any big moves.
Yeah, and that's very fair. Sort of summing up, the key thing is people need to understand I had been in Gammon for a long time, but I was part of the team and now I was leading the team. And so I needed to listen to answers as the leader rather than just as another member of the team. And that was quite an important thing. And coming in, understanding the culture doesn't mean to say that you're going to be best equipped to take the organization forward as the leader.
It's a really good point. As you transition into chief executive from being a peer as part of the executive team, were there some professional or personal shifts you had to make? Communication, time management, stakeholder management, that you had to make as you stepped into the role to succeed?
Absolutely, Rick. And one of the key things that sort of you need to assess is what is the new job? What is the new job brief that you're going to be doing? You have to be very careful to leave behind what you used to do and empower people that are now stepping into your shoes to do the job properly and not overshadow them. Because if you don't empower the organization, then you start to lose effectiveness within the organization. And so I was very clear to, there was a number of, I always remember when I first stepped into the leadership role, people would always queue up at the door with problems. And that would be external people, external stakeholders, and internal. People would come, right, here's a list of things that you need to deal with first, Kevin. And I was very clear that I wasn't going to get stuck in a quagmire of dealing with those issues. Of course, they needed to be dealt with. But I was very clear in terms of letting go of things that I used to do or things that needed to be handled by other people. I would listen and I would make sure that the responsibility was passed on to the respective member of my team. But I was very clear not to get sucked in, as some people see. And I listened to this time and time again as people are getting ready to go into new roles. They're being loaded up with baggage of challenges within the organization rather than looking at clarity of what I need to do for tomorrow and the day after tomorrow. And with regard to time management, it's really getting a balance between what I need to do looking outside into the organization, what I need to do from the balcony, looking down onto the operations on the shop floor, and then also spending time on the shop floor itself, trying to get all of that into balance, particularly as I went about in the early days setting my strategic plan. But more importantly now, I still like to have that visibility in the operations so that you don't become too distant. And it's very, very important, because there's been a number of things that we discuss within our boardroom, and I'd like to go and see how effective the communication has been to get the message down to the shop floor and back up again. So how we bring the messages back up from the shop floor back into the boardroom as well. So I've been quite careful around that. And there's some other things that we'll maybe talk about a bit later in terms of how I juggle the balance between the business life and the personal life as well, because that's also important. You may think that you're the CEO with the power in the boardroom, very important role, but at home, who are you?
That's a very good question to ask, isn't it? And we'll get to this question as well of how you balance these two dimensions of your role and your life. I am curious about, if you don't mind, you're coming in to a predecessor who had established a certain biography and way of leading as a chief executive with a team that got used to those dynamics and maybe a board that got used to those dynamics. And you've got to come in somehow, respect what happened in the past, but craft your own narrative, right? As an incoming executive. And I'm curious how you, chief executive, I'm curious how you manage this transition around your mandate, your style, your way of working.
It's a very important point, because my predecessor had been in the role for a long time, over 15 years as the chief exec, which, you know, I was reading a report in the Financial Times just this week, where they said the average tenure of a chief exec is now down to about 7 years. Well, this was a person that had been around 15 years, very well known in the industry with all of our customers, with all of the team. And I was someone that had grown up in the organization. I was 15 years younger than him. A lot of people that I was now going to have to manage had previously been my seniors in the organization. And so there were a number of different dynamics that we needed to do. And the other thing is to look at what was the situation at the business at that time. We were successful. We were performing. And so the narrative of changing things when you're already continuing to succeed is even more of a challenge. It's different if you're in, say, a turnaround situation and you've got to come in and you've got to fix certain things. People will understand that things need to change. But a lot of people, and particularly in the construction industry, which is a very traditional industry, a lot of people are very set in their ways. I call it the legacy mindset. We've done things this way for so many years. Why do I need to change? We're successful. The challenge I put to them is, well, you think you're successful. And I try to use data more than anything to let people understand how much more successful we could be. So again, it's sometimes not how unsuccessful we were, but how much more successful we could be if we change things. And one of my observations around the boardroom and around the business through those interviews I mentioned earlier was a lot of people like to shoot from the hip and make assumptions about how the business was performing. And so one of my first pieces of work was to actually do the analytics of how the business was performing and take the team away, the leadership team away, and look at what the reality was versus how we set things out to perform versus how we actually performed. And there was a measure of underperformance on certain aspects of the business. And so then I said, well, if we were able to close those gaps from a success point of view and be able to measure them, how much better could we be? And so that's the narrative that I started to build when I first came on board. And it was really having to think through that narrative, how we got people on board with the journey. And it was changed, because we also started to do a bit of transformation as well. So the business was succeeding, the business was busy, and we were going to go on a transformation journey as well. So this ambidexterity starts to come in. How are we going to play with this? And And a lot of it came down to mindset. A lot of it came down to behaviors. A lot of it came down to identifying the evangelists that we were starting to see. Some people didn't want to come on the journey and decided of their own accord to step off. That's fine. That's fine. If you're so resistant to change that you just want to leave the organization, we were willing to accept that. We weren't going to allow individual preferences to hold the business back. And we were very clear on these types of statements at the outset. So it was really about creating the narrative for change within the organization. And I was quite lucky that there were a few positions that were changing at the time. Two of the early changes I did in the leadership team, one was the CFO and the other one was the CHRO, which for me in the CEO position, obviously critical roles. Some of that was around natural succession and some of that was around the need to change to build the right team.
If I can just build on this this set of activities that you undertook, was there a point at which you put forward a North Star or a vision or what Gammon would become? And what was the timing for that? And how did you sell or align around that?
So we did some work. We brought in some external help to help build the narrative around it. And part of that narrative was a very clear communication plan, how we were going to roll out our transformation journey. And it wasn't just about transformation. There were hard figures. There was a program. And, you know, in construction, we were around numbers, we were around timelines. So everybody was familiar. It wasn't too distant from what they used to do in day to day. But we were very clear on what we wanted to achieve in terms of growth and improvement. And not only that, but how did we lock that improvement in for the benefit of our business rather than just passing it on to our customers? Because our business model is cost plus. So if we become more efficient with our costs and then you just add on a margin, all of your investment in transformation is just out the window. So we also needed to look at how we held on to the improvements in our business within the business as well, which was also a change of a little bit of a shift on the business model as well. And so we set out early financial ambitions. We set out a program. And on that program, the program was the most important piece. So I mentioned earlier, balcony and dance floor, and that comes from a piece of work I did on executive education a few years ago. But we decided to do it in waves, not all at the same time, because we didn't have the resource capacity. Remember my point, we were busy. So we decided to do it in waves. So on wave one, we focused at head office rather than out in the operations, because the last thing we wanted to do was start at operations and all the fingers start pointing back at head office and saying, look at you fat cats. You guys are up there in your ivory tower. You haven't touched yourselves yet, but you're focusing all of this improvement on the site. And so we consciously decided to start at center. And then on wave two and three, we've slowly rolled it out to the core of our operations. And that really helps because people have already, some of the naysayers have now seen the change that we've made in the way that we do things at center. And then we've started to look at then how do we transfer these types of projects and initiatives out to the core of our operations. So it's also about how we got people on board as we went along on the journey as well.
Yeah, very good. If we could come back to the dimension about the personal impact to you, would you mind sharing, if you don't mind, the personal impact of stepping into chief executive for the first time? And how did you manage that, particularly in the first 12 or 18 months?
Yeah, so one of the things that I've become better at over time is dealing with stress. And, you know, you're young, you're ambitious, and you maybe bang the table a bit too much. And over time, you get 360 appraisals done and you need to tweak this and tweak that. So over your career journey, you've got to be careful to pay attention to the feedback that you receive over time. And be aware that that feedback evolves over time as well, as long as you do something about it. And so one of the things I've always consciously done is take account of feedback and how that takes me on the next stage of my journey. And so I've become a better manager of stress. I've become the person in the room that tries to bring the temperature back down when conversations get a bit heated across the table. And that has been probably one of the biggest changes. But as I take it from the boardroom or the office to home, I have to park it. And it's been great having a partner, my wife, who's from time to time reminded me, Kevin, you're at home now. At the office, you're the CEO. At home, you're dad. And you need to understand that the reaction you're going to get at home will be very different if you bring the behaviors from the office home. So one of the things that I appreciate is when I get feedback is that, and listen, you have to be genuine in the role, but you also need to be aware of your executive presence in the office, and don't bring that executive presence into the house because it's not going to go down too well. And by having that healthy relationship where you can get honest feedback in the home, but also being genuine in the work environment as well, it's a great balance to have. And you've really got to be very, very careful about it. You've got to be aware of yourself in the situations. You've got to be aware when you're entertaining customers. You've got to be aware of your position. You've got to be aware where you're at various engagements where other stakeholders are present. But you've also got to be aware when you're at the parents meeting at the school, that you're not talking to them at the CEO, you're talking about your kids with the teachers and they're in the driving seat.
That's a wonderful set of summary about this what we call situational self-awareness and how you are leveraging a range of behaviors, right, and communication style based on where you are and what is the context you're trying to affect.
Yeah, and that awareness is so, so important. And it can change from you and I having this conversation now, and then in 45 minutes time, an hour's time, I'm sat at a dinner table with the family versus I'm into the boardroom tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. And so it's very dynamic, but you have to be aware of it and you have to be aware of how the conversation changes. Not how you change, but how the conversation changes and your behaviors change.
Very good. Could we talk briefly about your interactions with the supervisory board and our shareholders, and how do you're coming in with a strong predecessor who had obviously established strong ties and history with the board. How did you go about establishing your credibility, trust, support, alignment with the board during your first 12, 24 months?
Okay. So one of the things that people need to be aware of is Gammon is a non-listed entity that has two shareholders. So we're a joint venture, 50-50, straight down the middle. One of them is a London listed entity. The other one is Jardine Matheson Holdings conglomerate, Asia-based conglomerate. And so we have two very strong shareholders that have a very strong relationship with each other. They've been invested in this business together for over 20 years. And I came in with a very particular objective. I'm going to build the relationship between Gammon and the shareholders with me in the seat, not just pick up where things were. And so I went about it in a very particular way, how I built rapport and then established trust with the shareholders. Because, of course, the difference between you and the team and you and the rest of your executive board is that you're pretty much interacting day to day. But with your shareholders, that interaction is typically monthly and then quarterly for the big board meetings. So you can't build that trust in those windows where you interact formally. You've got to build it outside of that. You've got to find opportunities to build that. And so we took opportunity, and I particularly took opportunity as an example, when I was visiting my mother in London, I would reach out to the chief executive of Balfour Beatty and drop by the office for a cup of coffee and a catch up of what things were doing. Or we'd catch up for breakfast after he finished his morning swim, or we called up for lunch after he had finished his briefing to the analysts in the City of London. So we took time to interact. And that's a shareholder that's based 7,000 miles away. Locally here at Jardines, it's easier because they're 10 minutes away in a cab. And so we went about establishing that sort of trust. But the way in which you really build trust is you start to drive results. And they start to understand that Kevin, as a leader, is driving his team for performance rather than being embedded with the team and managing the shareholders. So one of the things I established very quickly is I managed a relationship with the shareholders and I managed the performance of my team rather than as the team together, we managed the shareholders. And that was, it may not sound like too much, but it's a very big difference from where we were to who we are now. Very big difference.
Very good advice for incoming CEOs and board dynamics, supervisory board dynamics. One final question, Kevin, is around what are the pitfalls or potential derailers if you were mentoring, advising a first-time CEO? What would you suggest to that incoming CEO to be careful of regarding pitfalls or potential derailers in the first 1 to 2 years in the role?
So I mentioned it earlier, and we have to be aware as CEOs, we've all come from somewhere. Quite typically, we've come from a particular area of expertise. My background is a chartered surveyor. Other people are engineers. Other people may be military. Other people are medical professionals or a lawyer or whatever your area of expertise. You've got to be very aware that that is not what you're doing when you're in the CEO seat. That is not why you've been appointed. Even if you're a lawyer and you're being appointed as the senior partner, you're not there to sort of crunch out the words and the documents that you used to do when you just finished your sort of internship and you're a freshly qualified lawyer burning the midnight oil. You've really got to focus on what is your new role? What is expected of you by your shareholders? They may be your fellow partners, or like me, they may be your supervisory board. If you're a listed company, they are the shareholders that hold your stock in the market. What are they expecting of you to do? So it ties back a little bit to what I said earlier about letting go of what you used to do, about clearly establishing what's expected of you, and about understanding what's going on in your space, in your sector, in your geography, what the landscape looks like ahead. Because your job is about focusing on not what's happening in the business today, that's part of what you do, but your job is about how you lead the business forward for success tomorrow, the day after tomorrow, next week, next year, and 5 years beyond. So you've really got to start to think forward a lot more. And you've got to start to understand, sometimes you hear the analogy of whether you're a left to right thinker or a right to left thinker, right? You've got to set out your stall. Where do you want to get to? And then you can work back, right, how am I going to get there? And so just by being good at the job you used to do, you need to understand that that's not good enough as you step up to be the CEO. That would be my first point. The other thing is that I really stop to listen into the gut feels within your organization. Now in the age of technology, there is much more data than was ever available to give you indicators of what's really going on in your business. Tap into that, listen to it, get some experts in that will help you understand what's going on in your business and where you can improve. And, you know, in the era of AI, that's becoming far, far more important. We've recently hired a new chief technology officer, and he's come in from a space where he's never had any experience in our sector. But I've not hired him for experience in my sector. I've hired him to drag my sector kicking and screaming into the 21st century with regard to technology. And so he's already looking at our organization thinking, why are you guys doing this? That's exactly the type of disruptor I want in my business. And so you've got to be also careful not to just coast along with the existing team and mediocre results and sort of improvement at the level of inflation. You've got to be focused on what is the potential of the business and how do I realize that potential? And then the other thing is to understand and to look out for how you get sort of people on board with your journey, and don't come in with the answer. So that coming in with the answer is really quite some challenging. That sort of bias that I come in and I know already what we're going to do is very, very dangerous. And you need to be very, very careful of that confirmation bias. Listen to people, but don't allow what you hear to say, that's exactly what I thought. You've really got to listen and then start to use the listening and your other research and the data to start to establish your plan. If you come in with the game plan already worked out, my guess is you're probably going to fail.
Really good advice for incoming CEOs. The first is about what we would call what got you here won't get you there necessarily. To take a step back at the functional expertise or historical ways of working probably won't meet the role complexity demand and role demands that you have to deliver to in a CEO role. The second point you made was around use evidence and data to confirm what's actually going on in the business and hold people accountable to it around decision-making, understanding key issues or challenges. I think the third you talked about was your role as a chief executive is to understand what is the actual potential of the business, and then how do we unlock it, and how do we practically unlock this, right? And the last one you had about getting people on board with the journey, right? And how you enroll people and you get them embedded into the journey where they're seeing their future and the future you're articulating. That's quite inspiring.
Exactly. I think Michael Watkins' book, right? The first 90 days is how to avoid organ rejection.
Exactly.
Right.
Very good.
How you get people slowly build and build and continue build, but have a game plan is how you build.
Really wonderful. Look, Kevin, thank you so much for spending time with us today to share your wisdom, experience. And I love that you're so transparent about some of the challenges you had along the way. I think it's a very useful piece for incoming CEOs or CEOs that are relatively in the new role. We'll be very happy to share this with them. So thanks again for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Rick. And thanks to everyone listening.
That's all for this week. This podcast was proudly brought to you by the International Institute for Management Development in Lausanne. You can find out more at imd.org.